Spirit Radio Podcasts.
And join with me on the line for this week's home and lifestyle tips, I have Therese Davey, where apparently we're going bananas today, Therese.
We are going bananas. It's the first day of spring. Happy spring, everyone.
Happy spring and happy St. Bridget's Day today to everybody listening.
I will always say spring begins on the 1st of February, regardless of what the changes or what the people in the Met Office say. I think today's... And the birds are singing mad this morning, so they are.
And the snowdrops are out and the sun is shining. I hope it's shining where you are too.
Well, my two snowdrops haven't decided to flower yet, but we'll bear on. It's only the beginning.
It's only the beginning. We'll get there. Yes, you're having a banana obsession today.
I am. Now, I have to confess, I've only ever made banana bread once. But that's the first thing.
That's, like, so unfair to your family, Therese.
Well,
it's so comforting. It's so lovely. But now, there's been a banana bread kind of craze during this whole lockdown season. Brown bread making and banana bread and all different types of things. But it's brilliant for using overripe bananas, right?
It is indeed. It's the first one I'm going to say. Banana bread, obviously, for using those overripe bananas that you've left together on the bunch. And they've all ripened together and you're not going to eat them all. So there's a couple of options. Make banana bread, make smoothies, freeze them and add them to smoothies later on. There's a couple of beauty options you have. You can make a sugar scrub with mashed bananas, some sugar and a little drop of lavender oil if you have it, and use it after the shower, and it's a great exfoliant.
There you go. And you'll smell interesting too.
You might do, of lavender. You can make a hair mask out of it. It's full of vitamin A and D and natural oils, and it's great for elasticity and hair growth. And you can make a hair mask, same thing. Mash your banana with a carrier oil of your choice, some honey. If you have coconut milk, even better. All into the food processor, rub it into the hair, sit back and read for 30 minutes, and then rinse it out and you get some lovely, silky, soft hair.
Shiny banana hair, I like it.
Shiny banana hair. Shoe shine on the subject of shines. You can use banana skins because they contain potassium. That's what goes into shoe polish. So you can rub your shoes with, or your boots, if you've got some old boots or old shoes that you don't have any polish and you don't have anything handy to clean them. Banana skin, buff them up with salt afterwards.
I'm going to be in trouble now, Therese. My mother's always giving out to me for not having clean boots and shine in my boots. She's probably going to throw a banana at me later and say, there you go now.
Well, I hope she doesn't hit you, but that it lands near your feet. And that'd be a big hint. Add it to your breakfast cereals and porridge. That's one we all know already. Add it to desserts. Freeze them. Now, this is something that I hadn't... I used to add it through ice cream before. And when I was in college, we used to create these desserts out of Swiss rolls and ice cream and bananas and freeze them. And we think they were great in a student block. But if you whip some cream, freeze some bananas, zip them through the blender, add the cream and some vanilla essence, maybe some cocoa if you want to make a chocolate banana ice cream, and refreeze it for a couple of hours, you get your version of instant banana ice cream.
And it sounds not too bad in terms of, you know, mostly fruit.
Mostly fruit.
Bar the cream.
Yeah, bar the cream. Two ingredients cookies, oatmeal and mashed bananas. Roll them up into little walnut slice, put them on a baking tray and bake them for 15 minutes and you get a two ingredient cookie.
That is a great one to try, especially with kids at home because it's so easy.
And it sounds healthy and safe. 150 degrees Celsius, 13 to 15 minutes, that's the recipe. Egg replacement, never heard of this in my life. If you're short an egg, if you mash a banana, it has enough starches and sugars and the right consistency. You can add it to a cake if you're eating a bread, if you're really stuck. The next one, plant fertilizer. I'd heard of that before. I mean, I throw out banana skins out of the garden because they're good for your roses.
And you just throw the banana skins just kind of, you don't need to like...
On the ground.
On the ground, you don't need to chop them up or anything.
No, I just throw them out under the roses. But they're saying put a peeled banana in a jar full of water and keep it for a day or two until it kind of mushes up or taints the water as such. Then strain out the solids and you have a concentrated banana plant food, which you add to 1 cup to a gallon of water and you get some diluted fertilizer for your plants if you're stuck.
Easy peasy and homemade. Yeah.
And homemade and organic and all that goes with it. Banana tea. I didn't like the sound of this at all. But seemingly the potassium in banana regulates blood pressure and kind of helps, magnesium helps relax your muscles. So adding a bit of cinnamon and banana together and to boiling water and trying to make your own this banana tea. No, I'm not fond of that one. But
yeah, well, look, you have to try it first before you judge. Who knew? I'm looking at my bananas in a whole new way. One in my handbag and I'm thinking, maybe I should hang on to that with all those things. Put in my hair, make a face mask. I'm sorted. Mm. Yeah, you've got an unusual...
Why would you eat it at all,
then? I don't know. I've got an unusual job of the week this week, Therese. Tell us about it.
Before Christmas, I was sending a letter to my third cousin once removed in Australia who was real. And she was a real person. And I was going to ring her this month and catch up on some family and ask her questions about my family in Australia. But last week I got a note back from a stranger saying she'd gone into care with early dementia. And we lost the chance to hear her story and our family story in Australia, I think. It is sad. So what I want people to do is become social historians this week. Find some pictures and stories in your family home and record it, share it. Get the grandchildren involved and tell them where this came from and what it's about and put a name on it. Or get some photographs and compare them to your own grandchildren. There's an old family photograph in our house, my grandfather, with his mum and granny, and there's a cousin's child with an image of him at the same age. So try and do that. Take out an old place and say this came from your mum's aunt's house and it came must be 100 years old. Create your own family history story this week. And share it and record it and don't lose it. This is a chance you have to do things like that with lockdown. It's creative, it's creating history and it's sharing it with the children. Please don't lose those stories and it's a chance to do it this week.
And it's a lovely idea as well, just something different. We all need a bit of diversion these days, Therese.
Spirit. The Holiday Doctor on Spirit Radio is brought to you by InsureMyHoliday.ie. Wherever you go worldwide, it's got to be InsureMyHoliday.ie.
So from today, if you are caught trying to holiday abroad, you're going to face a fine of €500. And the government is also working on introducing mandatory quarantining for certain passengers arriving from countries like South Africa and Brazil. And there is discussions on whether this will just be extended. So what is that going to mean then if you need to travel for an essential reason? What falls into that category? How does it work? Do you have to get a test? We'll be answering all of those questions. And there has as well been a bit of uproar around Taoiseach Micheál Martin's intention to proceed with his St. Patrick's Day visit to Washington to meet with the US President Joe Biden. And also, CEO of Ryanair today was on the radio earlier saying that we need to be hearing not scare stories, but daily vaccination figures released instead. We'll be talking about that as well with our next guest, the travel doctor, Joe Supple. Morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, Wendy. How are you keeping?
So tell us a little bit about the travel restrictions that are being introduced, because I think with all of this stuff, you know, there's different headlines and people are just kind of confused. What exactly is happening?
Yeah, I mean, up to today, if you travel to the airport or you're outside your 5K, you will be fined on the spot, €100 fine, which we've seen, obviously, lots of reports that actually, you know, been happening. And again, I suppose with the Gardaí, they've increased all the checkpoints now in and out of the airport and in obviously certain regions all around the country as well, just to try and clamp things down a bit. From today, and the government have introduced this, and basically what they're doing is they are really, really discouraging people from going away at all and just saying that non-essential travel is just not a thing that's going to happen. So from today, if you are caught being outside your 5 kilometre radius or you are going to the airport or somewhere else, you will be fined unless it is completely essential travel. If it's non-essential travel, you'll be fined €500 per person. So in other words, because like what it seems in the reports last week, a lot of the flights coming in are still coming in from Lanzarote and some of the Canary Islands and places like that. So people are sort of going off and having their holiday and thinking, well, I'll just go off and take a chance in it now. So it's a huge fine now when you think about it, you know. Like, in other words, if you did decide to go with a family of two adults, two kids, that's a €2,000 fine you're going to face. And yeah, they really are being very strict in this, Wendy, because I suppose they want to just keep things, you know, they want to stop. Because once people start going, people start to follow suit and maybe take a chance. So they really, really want to stop the non-essential travel. Now, when you go on non-essential travel, for a lot of the Canary Islands, you have to have, like, you know, your PCR test in place, whatever, 72 hours before, and all those type things in place. But even still, they just don't want it. They want reams of people heading off to the airport and heading off for their usual. Normally, I'd be on talking to you about winter sun and where we're going and what we're doing. And the government advice at the moment is just do not travel. No, none of
that. So what constitutes as essential travel? Or is there a list? Is there a list of reasons that you're allowed to travel without getting this 500 euro fine?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I suppose if you're a journalist going away to report and something like that, or if you're somebody who has a business that you need to go over and sort things out there, I suppose that would be essential. Again, if you, I presume if you had, like, a holiday home away, that work needed to be done, if something happened that you couldn't actually get something to fix on the ground there. So that's the main things with that. But it is sort of a grey area.
And you still need your PCR test. And how do you get that done? You have to pay for it yourself?
You do. You pay for that. And you have to pay for one on the way back as well. Because obviously coming into Dublin Airport now, if you have to have a clear PCR test or else... you're in big trouble, basically. They'll just take you in and you'll get fined very big on that. And also you could end up being in the SIMR, which we will be talking about, the South African Brazil, the mandatory air quarantine at designated facilities, which you will have to pay for yourself. But if you have, you know, essential travel, like, you know, a family member, something's happening, you live away and you're flying back in and whatever, again, you'll have to have your PCR test. But just for extra, you know, because you have to have 72 hours before entering into the country. If you have any doubts, or you know you don't want to bring stuff to the family, there is options there as well. And I know over Christmas time, even though people weren't supposed to really travel in, people did, and you do have places like the Tropical Medical Bureau who do those tests. And there's actually in Leopardstown in Dublin, there's a couple of them now around the country, they have the drive through so basically you go in there, right, you go and get your test, and you have the results in within 24 hours, which is a really good service, because you think about it, just for that extra confidence of knowing. I mean, especially over Christmas, a huge amount of people were using that who didn't make the decision to come home feeling as though it was essential for them. At that point, you didn't need a PCR test at all coming into Dublin. Now, obviously, they've introduced that into all the airports now, so you need to have the test done. But it's an extra thing as well. Again, if you're heading off somewhere and it is essential travel, it might be worth your while, you know, using that service, whatever. I mean, there's lots of different places you can get things done, but I think the drive-through one is a really good system, because basically you go online. I actually did it myself just to test it out through the media a couple of weeks ago, and it's fine. You're literally in, it's the throat, it's up the nose for about 5 seconds. You're done all in about 2 or 3 minutes, and then you drive off. And they give you an interface, you log in, and you get your test back. I just wanted to see what it was all about, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know, and just how easy it is on the one hand. What about, Joe, people who are in a situation where... Because I know, for example, Ryanair ran ad campaigns not so long ago, basically saying kind of Easter and summer holidays, maybe at a time where we thought there'd be more vaccines done, maybe at a time when we thought the numbers wouldn't be the way they are. But what sort of a position is someone in? Say they booked a holiday to go away at Easter. They can't go on it now. And they're just at a loss, they just have to kind of cancel it.
They do, and, you know, a lot of the accommodation places as well are being very, very flexible. In other words, they let you know, cancellation up to 24 hours before, at least you know that. But also Ryanair are issuing full refunds, and they're being very flexible with people if they want to change their dates or change their stuff. So the options are there for you, but obviously people who would have booked it, like you say, we're given a bit of confidence saying we should be back to, you know, a little bit of normality, so people might have taken a chance and booked something like that. Generally, they will all get refunds and all that sort of stuff, and there's no issues or problems there at all. I know Michael O'Leary was on this morning just talking about, you know, travel and stuff, and I mean, people are still travelling at the moment, and I suppose once the quarantine, like once the vaccine sort of comes out a bit more, I know figures aren't good in relation to Ireland at the moment, but it'll give confidence, I suppose, to people to feel like, okay, great, that, you know, I know his slogan, you know, which was like, you know, vaccine go. In other words, get the vaccine and go and feel safe with that. But, I mean, some of the airlines are already introducing a policy where you have to be vaccinated to actually travel on them, most certainly for international travel. So it's very much a grey area, but you will be entitled to a refund if you booked it by a certain time. Ryanair introduced that, I think, about I think about 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, because especially as it is a government mandated thing that it's only essential travel only, so you are entitled to a refund, and I think people need to be probably reminded of that, Joe. What about these mandatory quarantining restrictions coming from countries like Brazil and South Africa? Of course, other countries in Europe have already introduced these type of things.
They did, absolutely. A lot of the countries have. And with South Africa and Brazil, if you're coming in, it's basically the mandatory quarantine at designated facilities. So no matter what, even if you come in, which you'd have to come in with a negative PCR test, you will be required to do that, just with all the strains and stuff going on at the moment. And just because the figures are just so high there, similar to, you know, sort of ourselves, like, we fly to Germany. We can't. We're banned from flying to Germany at the moment. Do you know what I mean? Completely. And they've knocked off a good few countries off that as well, that you actually can't fly to Germany at the moment. But for anyone coming in from South Africa and Brazil, you will be required to mandatory quarantine at the designated facilities, which are being sourced at the moment from what I was hearing on the media. So, that's the situation there. But then for anybody else coming in with a negative PCR test, they'll be required to quarantine at home for 2 weeks.
And in terms of that story, Joe, about Micheál Martin, you know, saying, I'm going to go to Washington to meet with the new US President Joe Biden on St. Patrick's Day. And other leaders, you know, in other countries said, no, we're not going to do it this St. Patrick's Day, but our Taoiseach is still going. What do you make of that?
I've mixed feelings about it, to be honest, Wendy. I just thought, you know, okay, number one, you know, he runs the country here, that maybe, I mean, our relations with the USA have always been very, very good. And hopefully with Biden in there as well, they're going to get even better. So I don't know. I mean, I suppose as the head of the government, I think he should be first up there to get vaccinated. I mean, you think about President Trump getting it before and all these different leaders. And you know, that's the last thing that we need at the moment, because obviously we need to have a good leader and without getting into the politics of it. But I think maybe, you know, should be vaccinated. And I think maybe he should go and represent the country. But it depends, like you say, if other world leaders are saying, no, let's just leave it for this year. I don't know. It's a very grey area.
Yeah, it's hard to know. And I hate to ask you this, Joe, but we do have to look. It's the first day of spring. We want to have some hope. When do you think we'll be able to get some sun again?
Oh, God, I know. And, you know, that's the big question that everyone just wants to know. When can we actually just get away? I mean, when you think about it, next month we will be actually 12 months without really any travel or any sort of, for the, you know, 99% of the population. I don't know. If I listen to Michael O'Leary this morning, he feels confident that maybe, you know, in something like, you know, the July, August, September, maybe October time. I know that seems quite a bit away. But it just depends on what way things are changing daily, as you know yourself, in relation to all the different, you know, places that you can go to and what's accessible. And I suppose because we are in level 5 now at the moment, what level do we have to go down to, really, that they'll knock things off, like, you know, the 500 euro fine, outside your 5K? Will you still be allowed to go to the airport and fly? Who knows? I mean, like, from what I'm hearing in relation to the aviation, the cases are extremely, extremely low in relation to any spreads. So, you know, if we were seeing a huge influx of people getting the virus on aircraft and flights and things like that, I think it would scupper things completely. But we're just not hearing that. We're just hearing, like, very, very tiny reports. And even with that, you know, sometimes there's been, like, one or two cases on an aircraft and everyone else is clear. So it just... It's
hard to know. We don't have a crystal ball, unfortunately. Well, Joe, thanks so much for joining us today. And I do hope that the next time we speak, you might be talking about getting some summer deals overseas. We can only hope for that, right?
Be talking about exactly the hot destinations to go to. Just imagine yourself lying there by the pool with your little cocktail and whatever. Hopefully, fingers crossed, when we will be talking about that very soon.
The Holiday Doctor on Spirit Radio is brought to you by InsureMyHoliday.ie. Wherever you go worldwide, it's got to be InsureMyHoliday.ie. Spirit.
As a growing number of coronavirus vaccines are being rolled out in some countries around the world, there's a huge disparity and injustice that's been happening in that many wealthy countries are fueling an extraordinary gap with securing more than half of the doses coming to the market by the end of next year. And those in poorer nations might only be able to vaccinate 20% of their population sometime this year, meaning some rollout programmes mightn't be happening in some countries until 2022 or 2023. So how can the global distribution of COVID vaccines treat developing countries more fairly? What sort of mechanism can be used? On the line to tell us more, we've Caoimhe de Barra, the Chief Executive of Trocra here in Ireland. Morning, Caoimhe. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Wendy. Very nice to be with you.
So what do we know about the amount of vaccines that have been produced and who's getting them and how they're getting them? Who decides, you know, what country gets what amount? Is it all about political power and money?
Well, maybe before I jump into that, just to acknowledge that the whole issue around vaccines and availability of vaccines is very fraught, very sensitive and very personal. So here at the moment in Ireland, we're all rightly consumed with the news around kind of the numbers of doses that are coming into the country and when they're going to be delivered to what cohorts. And of course, the over 85, there's many of them still waiting for vaccines. And that's an issue of huge concern because we want to protect those whom we love and those who are most vulnerable. So that just situates it in our own context. But everybody worldwide, because this is a global virus with global impact, every community, every family, every individual across the globe has the same concerns. So this is a very human issue that touches every single person worldwide. It is also an issue which brings into very stark light the inequality that exists in the world. So, first of all, there is a global mechanism which is led by the World Health Organization and Gavi, which is a coalition for access to vaccines that predominantly works in poor countries and on vaccines that are most important for vulnerable citizens in those countries. And at the very outset of the pandemic last year, they set up a facility called COVAX. That's a coalition of 172 countries, including Ireland, which agreed to work together to make sure that there was fair access to vaccines for people in all countries, including 90-plus poor countries that don't have the resources to do what we're doing, which is within the EU, having advanced purchase agreements in place with the large pharmaceutical companies. So the European Union, the US, the UK, Canada, etc., have these advanced purchase agreements and have had them in place since probably the middle of last year, so that as vaccines have been under development, the vaccines then that have proven to be effective have been in effect bought in advance by richer countries. Now, some of those have also been bought in advance by COVAX. But the issue is that rich countries over the past couple of months have started to muscle in to not fulfill the agreements that existed from the middle of last year to make sure that the most vulnerable everywhere get the vaccine first and to become more competitive in terms of ensuring that their populations get as much of the vaccine as possible, as quickly as possible. So we have examples, for example, of countries that have pre-ordered volumes of vaccine that, should all those vaccines prove to be effective, would vaccinate their populations 3 to 5 times over.
So it's essentially stockpiling the vaccine?
Potentially. Now, the reality is not all of those vaccines are going to prove to be effective, but the vast majority of them, as we're understanding, are actually proven to be effective. And they have the first right to them, apart from the proportion that has been ordered by COVAX. So COVAX needs $7 billion this year to get enough vaccines to cover 20% of the world's poorest populations. The European Union spent or agreed a budget of $750 billion, just to put that in context, last year as part of its recovery plan. So resources are not, we're not wanting in terms of the ability of the global system, countries worldwide, to put resources behind this. But what we are seeing is that for reasons of political pressure, which is understandable because we all care about the most vulnerable in our own communities, the countries with the means to buy the vaccines are getting there first. So that means that countries, if we take a couple of examples, Trocra works in Somalia. We operate in Gedo District. We run all of the hospitals, health clinics, maternal clinics, etc., in a district which is the size of the island of Ireland and has a population of 250,000. It is affected by conflict. It's affected by drought. The people there have very, very little in terms of resources. If one of our doctors contracts COVID and COVID is in the community there, that doctor then has to self-isolate for 2 weeks. And that means that those services, those people who might come in with trauma following accidents, come in to deliver a baby, that all of those other things that they need, all those other services are not available because their doctors aren't vaccinated. So it is a huge knock-on impact if you don't vaccinate those at the front lines and those most vulnerable in all countries.
Yeah, and also bearing in mind even just what you said, Caoimhe, we're not only are we talking about a situation where frontline workers mightn't be getting vaccinated in some of these countries, but their health systems are obviously not comparable to some of the wealthier countries. So there's huge vulnerabilities on many different levels.
That's absolutely true. Now, this is not to say that countries, for example, many countries around Africa are dealing with this and dealing with it very well, partly because countries have been more used to these communicable diseases. So, for example, in West Africa and in DRC, Ebola was a huge issue, and countries like Sierra Leone, where we work, and DRC, where we work as SOCRA, learned how to deal with these highly transmissible, very infectious diseases, and did so very, very successfully over time. So they've built up a stock of knowledge around how to manage these diseases. Many African countries took very difficult but very clear early measures to prevent the virus becoming too present in their communities. So, for example, implementing full lockdowns, curfews, requiring people to stay at home, closing borders. Now, this had a really damaging effect on economies and on people in the 6 months, say, from March to August, September last year. So, for example, most people in the poor cohort of people would rely on day-to-day wage labour, for example, going to the market to sell small goods or hiring out your labour on a daily basis. So not being able to do that meant that millions and millions of people have fallen further into poverty. Food insecurity in the world has doubled from 130 million to 270 million. And that means that 270 million people literally don't know where they're going to get their food from one day to the next, unless they're receiving assistance from the government, the UN or NGOs in terms of food. So COVID is having a knock-on effect in these poor societies because the resources that the individuals have are far scarcer than the resources people here would have, and their governments don't have the resources to put into social protection systems or employment support systems that would exist in the global north.
So what needs to happen, Caoimhe?
Pardon?
What needs to happen? I mean, you mentioned there is meant to be kind of a mechanism to look at fair distribution of these vaccines through COVAX, but that isn't happening. So what needs to happen next to try and make sure that it does?
So what we need to see is governments like Ireland and multilateral institutions like the UN, but also the European Union, taking a very clear stand and saying, in line with what the World Health Organization director has said, is that it is our responsibility, but it's also in our interest to make sure that the most vulnerable everywhere get the vaccine first. So that means that we would be prepared as a society to say, okay, well, we can slow down the rate of vaccination for society at large, as long as the most vulnerable on the front line get their vaccine first, and to ensure that the same is possible in other countries. So that COVAX, for example, wouldn't be pushed out of the market for vaccines that are coming on stream in terms of production by wealthier countries, that they would get their fair share of the vaccines and be able to distribute them. And there is a mechanism and a plan to do that. There are centres for disease control, for example, in Africa, working extremely effectively, but they can only work effectively if they have access to the supply. So Ireland, the EU, the UK, the US, Canada, all of these countries need to say to their populations, yes, you will get your vaccine as soon as possible. The most vulnerable first, the frontline workers first, and then we will operate as a responsible global citizen, and we will make sure that everyone who is vulnerable everywhere gets the vaccine as early as possible. Bearing in mind that we all know that you cannot beat this vaccine one country at a time. You have to beat it as a global community, and none of us are safe until everyone is safe. So let's treat this as a global problem rather than a country-by-country problem.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it. Caoimhe, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. That's Caoimhe Tabara there, the Chief Executive of TROCRA. And if you want to get in touch with TROCRA, look at the work they're doing. Caoimhe mentioned some of it. You can go to trocra.org.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.